Hello and welcome back to another edition of Fun Friday with two very distinguished and special guests today. Two people that were working together for the first time on a deal that I don't know if we're allowed to talk about just yet. I think that by the time this is going, it'll be live here, but I think the deal is going to be a 506B. So slight hush hush, but reach out to them or us if you have any questions. But without further ado, please welcome on two new friends and partners to Lone Star Capital and to the show, Danny and Brian with Arc Equity Group, based in Chicago, Illinois. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us on, Craig.
Thanks, Craig. Good to see you.
Yeah, likewise. Nice seeing you. Of course, we're on site at the deal in Houston that we're working on together just a little ago, Brian. But are you guys staying warm in the winter there in Chicago right now, or are you guys trying to defrost? What's the weather there like today?
It's 38 and rainy. So it's been, essentially 0 degrees over the past couple of weeks. So 38 is feeling almost like 68. So we'll take it for January in Chicago.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, you guys have a very cool background, I would say for sure. You guys do a lot of things together, so we'll of course unpack that. You brokerage, you do deals together as LPs, as GPs, you find deals, you sell deals, kind of everything in between. But first things first, how did you guys become acquainted together? How did you guys meet each other and decide maybe getting into a partnership was a good idea?
Brian, you want to kick it off?
Sure. So Danny and I met actually shortly before COVID, maybe in late 2019. I was full force going as a broker at that time, and he was actually looking to get into brokerage. He's been in tech sales for a long time and was looking to explore his options in real estate. And so as we were talking about a potential brokerage partnership, COVID hit, and obviously the world changed during that time. So he decided to stick it out where he was, and we stayed in touch and ended up doing. I introduced him to a couple of people that they did a couple of smaller deals together, and then we partnered on a 38 unit, and we've been just working together since.
Awesome. So, coming from the tech sales side, what might made you want to get into real estate? I mean, obviously, it's a great way to diversify. A lot of people have compensation tied to tech, which is a lot more fluid. Yeah, it can kind of go, it can get hot, get cold. Real estate's slower trading. There's not a ticker on it all the time. So, what kind of naturally got your interest into the real estate world then, from the tech kind of background?
Yeah, so I've been involved in real estate for really the past 10 years now. And similar to your story, Craig, I started off in residential. I started off doing various fix and flips. I had a few single family rentals. I gradually pivoted to more so smaller multifamily. And then over the last 4 years is when I've really focused on larger scale multifamily. And my why behind that is really when you look at the wealthiest people in America, they work for equity. And real estate is a platform and a tool to accomplish my long-term vision of what success from a lifestyle as well as an income potential looks like. And to be honest with you, I really enjoy educating my tech community on the benefits of real estate because I think there's so many people that are interested, yet what they actually sign up for is they're signing up to be a landlord as opposed to being an investor. And why we're all in the space is to truly be investors. And I really like educating my community on, hey, the difference between a landlord and really the benefits of an investor in commercial real estate.
Absolutely. And I think so many people look at real estate, well, oh, it's so hard, it's so difficult. Well, exactly. That's why you want to be in the business. That's why you want to be investing it and try to be in the passive side, maybe not on the operation side for some people, because if it is something that's difficult, well, that's perfect. There's value to be created there, right? There is a barrier of entry. There's a moat around it. There's a reason why the returns there are going to be higher than maybe what the stock market can look like, because how many times does that money touches hands before it comes into your pocket for the investor shareholder return? As opposed to real estate, you're typically the one in there that gets the market upside, the market beta over time, as opposed to that dilution that the stock market wealth creation has to offer. And of course, stocks and bonds, good options, but we're obviously all here, probably more biased and more real estate related. And I always looked at real estate as an inception game. If I can sell real estate, that means I can buy more real estate. So I sell more real estate to buy more real estate, so on and so forth. Let the cycle repeat. And, you know, I always say this, but when I grow up, I truly want to be a landlord. So I love that. That's the exact mindset and acumen that I kind of applied as well. Just get to the, as Robert Kiyosaki would say, the I side, the investor side. That's really where the gains and the magic happens. So Brian, you obviously have a unique background. You know, similar to myself, brokerage space, two LP, two GP, two capital raising. So kind of tell me about your story about there and your, you know, natural progression of going from selling places to maybe buying some deals and then to LPing, to GPing, to raising equity now for a third party group like us. What's that story been like for you?
Yeah, so I had a little bit of a different path. I started in real estate in 2007. So I believe it was July 07, right before the 08 crash. So my first few years were pretty difficult in brokerage. I was full-time broker, started commission only day one. I had to wait tables nights and weekends the first few years just to get by and pay the bills. But I stuck it out. And then in 2010, I switched over to multifamily full-time and started just focusing on selling multifamily properties throughout the city and suburbs of Chicago. Then in 2014, I moved over to a boutique firm in Chicago called Essex Realty Group, and they focused just on mid-market multifamily. I was able to come here, build out a team that focused on the suburban marketplace in Chicago. And we ended up doing, you know, year over year, well over $100 million in transactions per year. So as I was going through my brokerage career, you know, when you're doing a deal with somebody, as you know, sometimes you become very friendly with brokers. You're working together, you know, day in and day out for months at a time on deals. And if you're an active investor, you're working with the same few brokers over and over. So I was able to build a lot of relationships during those years. And I believe in 2016 or 17, I started investing passively. I was just making good income that I wanted to invest and also get some tax benefits instead of being a high earner from a 1099 position. And then in 2018 and 19, started acquiring actively. I partnered with a few people that I met through brokerage, my clients. So I was able to have a path where my clients become friends, then they became partners. So I jumped into the deep end on my first deal, did 100 unit in Northwest Indiana. Wow. With a couple of my brokerage partners and one of our clients, and, you know, picked up about 13, 14 more properties in the following years.
Incredible. And so interesting. You said something that I really want to harp on real quick that has not been touched on in the show, but you guys will appreciate this and laugh. You have to be very, very mild-mannered and respectful of people you do deals with, because you never know who you do a deal with, the significance of that long-term. And it's a very small brokerage community one way or another, and your name and reputation is so crucial. And that obviously carries over to what we do at Lone Star Capital. You know, if you get a notorious reputation of not being good to work with walking away from deals, with being very difficult to transact, you're not going to be the buyer of choice, and people are going to kind of shy away from you over the course of time. So it's so crucial to make sure that you maintain good rapport, you treat everyone with good class, you treat everyone with dignity and the respect that you would want back, because things do come full circle, and it's so cool. I'm sure you've done deals now and picked up investors from, you know, kind of how you've handled yourself through the brokerage process. I have no doubts. And similarly with you, Danny, I'm sure you've probably picked up a lot of investors and people along the way from your tech sales route that have been folks you've worked with over time that you've just harvest relationships with. So you really just never know who your investors or who you're going to work with in time. But, you know, it's important to maintain a good relationship and a healthy relationship with everyone over time, of course, as you do deals. And that's just a good way to carry your personal brand and a way to conduct yourself. With that said, what was your guys' first investment into the real estate world?
Yeah, so like I mentioned to you, I mean, let's go kind of three phases, so to say. My first investment was 23 years old. I bought a single family fix and flip in a suburb of Illinois with a partner of mine. I think we bought it for $110,000, put in $40,000 and ended up selling it for right around $200,000. And from there, I was hooked. Like I really was hooked on, okay, how do we rinse and repeat? How do we rinse and repeat? The problem with that is this was all while I was having a tech sales career. And my responsibilities continued to increase as well. And when I looked at that, it was not a scalable, repeatable process for me. You know, after doing 10 to 15 fix and flips, I was making some money at it, but it just was not what I was looking for. I was signing up for a second job as opposed to truly an investment. So that's when I pivoted into a smaller 12 unit in Chicago with a couple partners as well. We raised some equity from the tech sales side in my community. And then it's funny, you know, as I was thinking about, you know, my why, and I'll be honest, some of my most profitable investments have been as an LP. And I think that's just something that's worth noting out. And I say that,
Absolutely. That's
you
actually,
know.
I'm so happy you're saying that because so many people want to have 100% of the control. They want to have all of that. They can't fathom the premise of giving up any of the autonomy associated with the deal, which is obviously a time drag, but please, yeah.
Right. So I think that's something that I want to point out as well. Of my first syndication was as an LP, and the benefits of that to me was I was able to learn from experienced operators like a Lone Star Capital. I was truly an investor and not an operator, so my time standpoint was significantly less, and also, I think the Midwest is a great market, and I'm actively looking to continue to acquire in the Midwest. And Brian can touch on that later. But I also was able to get diversification to other great markets like Texas, like Arizona, et cetera. So, you know, that's kind of my journey of my first fix and flip, my first smaller multifamily, and my first syndication. And just something I want to point out is, you know, individuals are trying to figure out what route to go. The value of becoming an LP first, of thinking larger and investing alongside an experienced sponsor like a Lone Star Capital.
Brian, how about yourself? First investment?
My first couple of deals were actually as LP as well. I knew through my brokerage company, there were a couple of people that had been syndicators as well. They had done a bunch of large deals throughout the suburbs here, and they were buying something that was maybe 2016 or 17. And so it was more, I trusted the sponsor. And a lot of this is you're betting on the jockey, not the horse. So we had a good relationship. So I invested with them. And then the next year, I invested in another project with a group that I'd met through a networking event. And I learned a lot with both of those, but those LP investment certainly helped me accelerate my path to a GP, and it made me understand a little bit more about what to do and what not to do. So I learned from both. My first two investments were both as LP as well.
I love that. And, you know, we'll get into kind of what you guys look for because you're kind of in a hybrid situation. You LP in deals, you be the GP, and you'll raise capital. So, truly, a full array and spectrum of services that you guys, of course, provide to your investors. And, of course, on your end, you guys are intelligent people where you want to leverage, you know, the networks of other people to obviously sharpen thoughts and, you know, really mastermind and collaborate. That's what I respect so much about you both. And I remember when Danny, we first had our conversation, you alluded to that, which is super cool. But with that said, Brian, I want to kind of turn it over to you. Obviously, you can kind of find some really sweet deals that are slightly more undervalued in the sub 100 unit space. You know, I think if you really want to get the best basis possible, it's probably gonna be something that's sub 50 units. It's probably gonna be maybe in a secondary market. And it's probably gonna be, you know, someone who's not fully in the space. And, you know, naturally what we do at Lone Star Capital, it's 150 plus units. We kind of have a new memo at the firm that, hey, you know, for us to really make it make sense, the minimum check deal size is probably gonna have to be about 30 million bucks. And the reality is that that's that mid-market space where we've got institutions, you know, giving equity out here, really smart, sophisticated folks. So market cycles like right now is when you're really gonna get the best deals. But in your space, you can get an undervalued deal with, you know, substantially underperforming rents and, you know, deals where, you know, either rents haven't been updated or units, excuse me, haven't been turned over, but they're market there. But if you turn them over, we're looking at a $300 pop on about, you know, an $8,000 renovation where the math really is obviously favorable, right? So with that said, when you do kind of look for deals in your home market, in your backyard, where you do want to spearhead the initiative, what does that look like for you guys? What type of deal profile do you look for? What gets you excited? What gets you going? Because it's so different, really respectfully, from what we do, right? So I would love to hear kind of the indicators there naturally with your broker deal flow. I'm sure you get to cherry pick some of the good ones too, I imagine. So that's the legal insider trading in the business that we get to experience in real estate.
Yeah. So, well, first, as a broker, I made sure not to try to acquire properties where I was brokering. So I was brokering throughout the suburbs of Chicago, and I really started focusing on Northwest Indiana, which is about an hour outside of Chicago, but not a market where I was active as a broker. I really wanted to keep that church and state separate. I did not want to compete with my clients. That's how you just get a bad reputation in the business.
Well done.
That said, as I took a step back and really stopped brokering by the end of 2020, between 2019 and 2021, early 2022, a lot of what we bought, like you said, were in that 30 to 60 unit range. And some of them were anywhere from a light value add to Danny and I were part of a project where we pretty much gutted the building down to the studs. And I really was able to get through those projects, refinance most of those. In some cases, we put on long-term debt. We have a couple of properties where, because we don't have outside investors in these projects, we're able to put on, 10, 12, 15-year debt at anywhere from, I think my lowest interest rate is 3.14 or 3.15. And, that's for 7 years. I have a 3.7 for 15 years, 12 years to go on that. And then a couple in the four, four and a quarter range. So I think the advantage of that and just getting in at a good basis, like you said, was getting it through the rehab within a year or so, be able to refinance, pull the capital out, and put on long-term debt at a really good time.
Right. So do you kind of typically look for, what would be your kind of slam dunk, no-brainer kind of profile? What's your preference there when you kind of analyze those deals in that market?
Yeah, so in Northwest Indiana, there's Valparaiso, Chesterton, LaPorte, these are all, BC areas, but I really focus on the B quality assets. So we've done a couple in the 70s build. Right now, I'd say we're looking at 80s or newer construction. I would actually say I'd prefer something a little bit more stabilized than value add today, just because it's really hard to complete a full renovation project with the way that the bridge interest rates are. So while we've done a lot of value add in the past, right now we've been looking for stabilized, and the last couple of deals we've done, we just haven't had to put a lot of money into it. Still got it at a good basis. We're doing some unit turns as we go, but we're locking in the 5 or 7 year debt on the front end.
Right. Very cool. And then switching gears into, your avatars, who you raise from and whatnot. Obviously, Danny, you have the tech sales background. And then Brian, you have the real estate, investor background, people who are already in the business and whatnot. But would love to hear from both of your guys' perspectives about who you raise capital from, what that looks like, how you kind of manage that on top of everything that you kind of do currently. Because naturally, if I'm not mistaken, you're both probably, have families, you have busy jobs, and this is the incremental way to make a little extra bucks on top of what you do. We're all really busy. That's why we probably all get along, because we're, high performing and, achieving individuals who are looking to, max out, our earning potentials and whatnot, and, grow our connections, our relationships, and pools of income streams and whatnot. But where do you guys raise from? How is it similar and different and overlapping? Because it's two different sides of the spectrum, tech, real estate. So we'd love to hear both the perspectives on that.
Yeah, I'll go first, Craig. So I would say, really quick, why I like raising is it's really telling my story and the value that it has provided for my life, like being able to, quote unquote, retire my wife, have her stay at home, have additional sources of income. So what I like is really telling my story, both with my tech community, through my LinkedIn platform, and just through conversations in general. So I, in regards to your question around the avatar and my space, there are many accredited investors who are extremely busy and who are wired to think, well, maybe I will buy a duplex or a three unit in Chicago, live in one, rent the other two out, or start small. And what I like educating my community on is really think large. And I really go through like kind of a four-step process with them. And it's really, how much time do you really have? Like, let's be real. We're in the tech space. Like, how much time are you willing to, commit to this? How active or passive do you want to be in this space? Are you willing to be passive? How much capital do you have? And again, in my space, there's excess capital available. And then, when do you need access to the capital? And I like taking the consultative approach and if this could, you know, if this route is for them, great. If they're saying, no, I want to do it all by myself, then okay. You know, that, hey, so be it. But yeah, I mean, I share my story to my peers in the tech space, discuss the benefits and try and walk them through that framework at a very high level to see if this investment vehicle could be a fit for them. Because I'd say, you know, 7 out of 10 individuals who I speak with, they don't know what a real estate syndication is. So that's what's fulfilling and enjoying to me.
Well, you know, and I love, you said so many great things right there. And what you really basically got down to is, I can tell you're in tech sales because you're qualifying the person. You're qualifying the person on many levels. One, you know, we all have chains of command here. So if you're doing your own syndication and your own deals there, well, is this person going to be a good fit for someone I want to be married with for a couple of years? Or does this person like to churn through liquidity? Can I kind of get in and get out, get in and get out, get in and get out? Because if that's the person, you by no means want that person. Or are they going to be someone who parks their money and could pretends like it doesn't exist, and if it evaporates and goes to zero, they wouldn't bat an eye because they're fine. So figuring out the why, and I couldn't agree with you more about the consultant approach. I kind of break it out because I really want to qualify people, whether it be an LP or capital raiser. You know, when we're working with capital raisers, we are not looking for another chef in the kitchen. We are not looking for another person who thinks they're going to come in and, you know, get a conversation with Rob and Kent on a weekly basis, unless they're probably a JV partner. That's just really not realistic. Similarly, for a $50,000 to $500,000 investor, I'm sorry, I'd rather just take 10 more calls than to have give you some VIP treatment where you're taking up more time than 20 investors get inclusive on the deal. So there's so much of that associated, and making sure that it's the right fit is the most important, because there are bad eggs for investors. Not all equity is traded equally, obviously, as we know in the business, and we don't want headache or problem clients. And that's why naturally, right when I started connecting with you guys, I thought you were a good fit, because clearly you guys have a very fluid and good understanding and are reasonable, considering that you guys are both, you know, on all sides of the spectrum here, are going to get what we're looking for. And, you know, we have a clear expectation of what we're both delivering from a value perspective, which is so great. So Brian, I'm going to turn it over to you. Similarly, what are some of the people that you invest like? What are the questions you're asking them and all that?
Yeah, most of the properties I'm in, I'm actually in as a joint venture partner. So a lot of it was just, like I said, my brokerage clients became partners over the years, and we would find deals together, and we would just, you know, acquire them 3-4 people in a deal and just split it pari passu. So there's been a couple times where, you know, have a, you know, a couple larger investor friends and partners where they took up the majority equity in a couple of the larger buildings, but everything's been structured for me as a JV for the most part. So everybody I'm working with is already very fluent in real estate. They're experienced investors. They've been doing this for a long time. The questions are more about the area, the business plan, you know, rent comps, using my experience as a broker to be able to identify the post-renovation value. And that's the questions that I answer when we're going through these processes.
So do you think you're, when you do have a deal that you're raising for, more particular than the average person, Brian, considering your acumen, considering your experience and having sold, you know, on a recurring basis, you know, running the brokerage of $100 million plus, do you feel as if you have an inherent leg up and built-in trust factor that most people do not get the benefit of the doubt of? Because let's say if you're, you know, not related, obviously, Danny, most people aren't like you who are fluent in the tech world and real estate. But even if you were just maybe a tech person that, you know, obviously invests in real estate, you're probably going to have some uphill battles you deal with. But Brian, from your perspective, do you think you just get the benefit of the doubt a lot easier when it comes to raising money, when people are kind of on the phone with you, just because of your level of experience, you know, obviously about what, 17 years now from 2007 of being in the real estate business?
Yeah, there's definitely some built-in credibility just with my experience and, you know, having been in multifamily since 2010, and I do this full-time. I'm lucky to be in real estate 100% full-time. I haven't had a W-2, you know, outside real estate job since 2006, I guess. So there is some built-in credibility there. I think also some of the things that I can talk about that help out is, you know, I've seen a lot of deals both that I've been in as a partner and then that I brokered. I've seen a lot of deals close, a lot not close. I know what to look for, what not to look for. what questions to ask the brokers, how to get navigate the best and final process if it's a multiple offer scenario. And then most importantly, you know, over half of our deals have been off market, and a lot of it's been through, you know, an outside marketing campaign similar to what I did to build my brokerage business. So able to combine all those skills definitely gives me some built-in credibility when I'm talking to newer people.
Absolutely. And I definitely think that if you're not always kind of going to that progression with regards to real estate of, hey, you get into the weeds of maybe you're doing leases to, you know, running the building to this, to selling them. If you're not kind of naturally thinking about the progression there, you're just not, you know, getting the edge and leveling up as we develop and kind of mature into our career. So it's so cool that you have taken that leap. And I think we all know professionals that are in the business, but don't invest in the business, which is kind of a red flag. You know, someone who used to sell homes, listen, if I'm selling Lone Star stuff or selling homes, I better own a home. I better be invested in Lone Star stuff. Otherwise, I'm kind of fraudulent. It's kind of my perspective on the matter. Or maybe not fraudulent. Maybe just I'm not set up. But I would prefer to work with someone, knowing my experience now, who has their money in the game, who has been through that process, who knows what it's like to wire maybe 100K or 50K for the first time, and it's scary. Or, hey, you're buying a house and you're, you know, doing XYZ renovation. You can talk to someone through it more versus, oh, we'll just do this. Well, if you've never experienced it, you know, who are you to say, right? So with that said, segueing into, you know, some things that you look for when you are going to make a real estate investment and you are going to do a deal, what are some of the metrics and key things in the deal that you look for that get you comfortable, both Brian and Danny?
Yeah, I'll start. For me, right now, today, in this market, I'm looking at basis, first and foremost. I think, as we've seen the last couple of years, there's been a lot of inflated values in various markets, some more than others. The Midwest hasn't been, you know, as inflated as other markets the last couple of years, but still going in at the right basis as you see more loan assumptions happen right now. You know, a lot of brokers are trying to, you know, oversell the property because it's got great debt on it for three or four more years, but you got to look at what's that principal pay down going to be in three or four more years. And yeah, you might be able to get a nice juicy cash on cash return right now, but are you going to be able to refinance and at what LTV? So you have to assume today's interest rates when refinancing in 2, 3, 4, or 5 years. So first and foremost, right now I'm looking at basis and, you know, something where I can put at least 5-year fixed debt on it, not looking for bridge debt at the moment, unless it's a really, really juicy project that I can get in and out of in 2 years. So those are the two things that I'm looking at mostly right now.
And I'd say, you know, one thing that Brian has taught me is risk adjusted return. And I think it's easy to see a product out there and you look at the theoretical returns, but you fail to look at the asset or the business as a whole. And I think, you know, that's one area that I've learned a lot from Brian on is, you know, understanding the story, understanding the entire property holistically, the why, and also, again, to me, that debt piece is very, very important. But again, asking ourselves, what is providing the greatest risk-adjusted return in today's market right now?
Awesome. So when you guys aren't doing a deal internally where you're the lead GPs or doing a JV, what type of deals do you guys typically raise for? Do you guys typically raise for just multifamily? Would you go into mobile homes, or are you just pretty niche in a couple of places? I'd be curious to know your takes and perspectives there.
I'll start off. So for me, you know, I'm not going to raise for something that I don't personally invest in. So my experience has all been in multifamily. And then over this past year, I have invested into a handful of debt funds, and I see some benefits there, given the cash flow, given the liquidity options. And it's something that Brian and I have talked about as a potential option in the future to explore further.
Yeah, for me, I'll go back to getting in at a good basis. You know, the deal that we're talking about partnering on, Craig, part of why I love the deal is because I think it's at such a great basis. And especially when you compare it to other properties in the market from a couple of years ago to today and what we think is going to happen in the near future. So I'd say location, basis, and most importantly, you know, the operating partner. For me, I'm not in other asset classes. I like to just stay an inch wide, go a mile deep. I've been in multifamily for so long. I know it so well. I don't want to try to learn the office, retail, or industrial market at this point in my career. I'd rather just keep building the multifamily portfolio. As Danny mentioned, we're both in a couple separate debt funds, and that's a really interesting product type for all the reasons he mentioned. You know, getting a good 8 to 10% cash on cash return every month. Usually there's some tax benefits in there as well, depending on the particular fund. And it's also all in real estate. So it's, you know, first position real estate. So that's what I'm focused on right now. When we're looking at other product types, it's more about the operator location and the basis for me.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for that sharing. And, you know, naturally, you only being a multifamily makes us more flattered that you elected to feel comfortable to work with us. So with that said, how do you vet a sponsor or someone to work with? Because naturally you get deal flow, you have your insider trading, you have your insider information, you know what a good deal looks like. How do you get comfortable, you know, kind of third parting those responsibilities and putting your money and your investors' money with a deal like us? How do you get comfortable with that? How do you choose someone you work with? Can you kind of walk us through that, both Danny and Brian, please?
Yeah, for me, I try to do some research on the front end, just as far as track record, deal history. You know, thankfully, I have access to CoStar. I can see, you know, everybody's deals throughout the country, see how they performed in the past. Try to talk to some people who have invested, whether it's as a fund manager, like what we're doing here, or individual investors. And, you know, being a broker for so long, I have no issue calling up other brokers in different markets and just, you know, talking with them about various areas, properties, operators. And so just, you know, doing some due diligence that way. I think word of mouth is a huge thing. And you guys have a great reputation, both in the market that we're looking at with you, with I think over 1,000 units at this point, and in-house management and construction, as well as great brokerage relationships. So all the feedback has been positive. But yeah, it's really just doing your homework on the actual person. I have some resources available that other people don't, as far as being able to look at deals and, you know, past deals through CoStar. But, you know, it's a combination of everything.
Yeah, and Craig, just to add on to that, Brian's point, the vertical integration that Lone Star offers was certainly something that was attractive to me, as well as, you know, really your focus in specific markets. And, you know, for us to invest alongside a sponsor that is focusing on, you know, 10 different markets, it isn't as attractive to us, because I don't think there's as large of a competitive advantage there. The fact of, you know, after, you know, a couple conversations, I knew exactly where Lone Star is, how you're going to scale, and, you know, what your vision is for the next 3 to 5 years. So, and also it's the who part too of yourself, Rob, and team as well.
And I think, did you find us, Danny, or did Brian? But I believe you inbounded through our systems. I believe you filled out the new investor form there. So I'd just be curious to know how you found us and how you just got comfortable with us. Was it, you know, kind of consuming more of our content and information? You know, what really made you get comfortable? Because I said it's probably a big deal for you guys, bigger than maybe you're even leading it on to be, to work with a group, not internally, because naturally you're deferring some of the fees and the responsibility, and you're basically, you know, relying on us to protect your name, preserve your capital effectively, right? So right. I'd be curious to know that story.
I'm a big believer of a 20-30 minute conversation never hurt anyone. And to all the listeners out there that are, you know, listening to real estate related podcasts, take the next step and reach out to a podcast that you're interested in and schedule 20-30 minutes. So, you know, I mean, candidly speaking, Craig, I have, you know, 2-3 calls a week with various sponsors to A, follow up on a podcast and learn from them, B, understand potential partnership opportunities. So that would be my 2 cents of, don't just listen to a podcast, actually go and make a relationship following a podcast. And that's really, I would say, how things got rolling for us.
So you talked to a lot of groups, and we fortunately made it through the very, very, very difficult scrutinizing vetting process.
Certainly. Yeah, I think it's, you need to see if you're a fit, just, you know, at a high level from a potential partnership standpoint as well. And I think that just comes with time as well. So that would be my 2 cents of, you know, how I go about narrowing my funnel. It starts with a conversation, and continue to reach out, and you know, you'll end up finding your niche of who you feel comfortable partnering with and investing with.
Well, the coolest thing there is speed. So let's just break this down for a second for all those who are wondering about the process and whatnot. I throw my email out there a lot. Once more, it's craig@lscre.com. For those listening to Capital Spotlight, you'll know that's kind of a joke. I spam my email out there. But the reason why I do that is because people like Danny have filled out our new investor form, inbounded into us, asked questions. And within a quarter's time, without exaggeration, I met Brian in Houston about 2 weeks ago in Houston for the first time. And then I'll be meeting Danny here coming up in Phoenix for Race Fest. Shout out Hunter Thompson for Race Masters. I think this will actually be airing the week there. And, you know, at this point I'll have, you know, had a meal with Brian, and then I will have had taken out Danny to a nice steak dinner with some of our other capital partners at Scottsdale, at probably Mastro City Hall that night. So that'll be a great dinner. So I'm assuming it was a great dinner. We had a nice time. So nice seeing you last night. But with that said, it really is a speed thing. So in a quarter's time, we'll have hopefully have done a deal together. We'll have connected. We'll have had meals. We'll have seen each other multiple places. You'll be on the podcast, and we're all comfortable with one another. So I think that is so valuable for developing a relationship and doing it quickly while we're all in different locations. So it really just is important. And as you said, take the next step. Want to transition into something else here now, which is kind of the markets that you're in. I know we kind of talked before, and we kind of reviewed some notes, and you wanted to kind of dive into the Midwest market and why you like that one, that market compared to other ones. So we'd love to have two experts who are in the trenches there that are know it, are from it, and are operating there. Tell me why. Give me the pitch. Give me the why as to why you're so entrenched there, why you're doing deals there, and are bullish on it long term. Because if I'm not mistaken, you're in Illinois pretty heavily. It's a blue state. So elaborate, please.
Yeah, so we're mostly Midwest based. Anything from, we have properties in Wisconsin, Illinois, Indiana, and Ohio. When I started looking at acquiring properties on the general partner side, one of my main metrics was I want to be able to get to and from the property within a day if I need to. You know, Indianapolis is 3 hours drive, Cincinnati is 5 hours, Kenosha is an hour and a half. So I tried to just focus on the markets surrounding the Midwest. As I've learned more and more over the last couple of years, I like the market because, you know, as you've seen, Craig, in the last few years, the Sunbelt markets in particular, there's been, you know, three and a half, four cap sales, a lot of them between 2021 and early 23, I guess. And those properties are in a lot of trouble right now. So while there's a lot of growth coming into those markets, there's also, you know, some of these markets got crushed. I have a friend who's a broker in Atlanta at JLL, and he was telling me that their sales volume year over year is down 70%, and the values are down on average 30%. Midwest just doesn't get hit like that. It doesn't shoot up the way that the Sun Belt does. But, you know, I think in Chicago, we were number one in rent growth last year. And in the Midwest in general, we're still steady at 5 to 10% rent growth in most of these markets that we're in. So I don't think it's been overinflated. And when the market does adjust like it does in 2023, and there's just a complete dislocation with interest rates, the values went down a little bit, maybe 5, 7, 10% on the high end, but we're not seeing these 20, 30, 40% swings. So I think it's very consistent from that standpoint. And the other thing is really just taxes and insurance. You know, as you know, in Texas, you're paying $1,000 to $1,500 per unit in insurance. Our Midwest portfolio averages about $400 per unit insurance. Taxes are anywhere from 10 to 20% of the gross income. You just don't have to pay that much for those things. And I think it's just more consistent. There's a lot I do like about the Sun Belt market. I love the project we're looking at in Houston with you guys. But overall, you know, I'm a Midwest person at heart, and I know the market so well, and there's a lot about it that I like.
Yeah, and just to add to that as well is the supply and demand equilibrium. I think as you look at some Sun Belt states of the amount of new supply into that market and what that can do to, you know, rent growth or lack thereof, you really just, you don't see that equilibrium off as much in Midwest markets that we're actively evaluating.
Awesome. So switching gears again to a very tumultuous and interesting market last year in 2023, how has the 2023 market affected your outlook for 2024 and 2025 and maybe even beyond? Obviously, there's the micro in terms of maybe a year or two projections, and then the macro and beyond. So be curious to know your perspective as to how 2023 has shaped your thoughts for the next 2 years and so forth.
Yeah, in the Midwest, I think I have more interest in either a stabilized or even a light value add property that has more upside with operational management or organic rent growth. It's tough to pencil out how a heavy value add bridge project would work today. I think you have to lower your rent growth assumptions, even in the Midwest, where it's still been growing, 5 to 7% this year. And you have to look at the exit cap rate. You can't assume that an exit cap rate is going to be anywhere in the fives. One thing that, it's talking about like Midwest versus Sunbelt, the Midwest never really went below a five cap market. So you can get a new construction A-class property in Indianapolis for five and a quarter cap. People are still able to buy and put fixed debt on those assets, which is unlike some of the Sunbelt states. So the basis is most important in the Sunbelt in particular. It's all about basis right now for me, just given that some of these markets have adjusted 20, 30, 40% down. Again, like the project that we're looking at, I think going in at a great basis, 2024 is a great time. I think it's now. I don't think it's 6 months from now or 12 months from now. I think right now, today, is a fantastic time to acquire some properties at a really good basis, put on fixed 5 or 7 year debt. You don't have to do a lot. And if there's any cap rate compression, you're going to just crush it on the deal. So,
Craig, I guess shameless plug for Lone Star. How does 2023 change things for 2024 for you all?
Yeah, that's a great question. So spinning it back to us, I would definitely say that the biggest takeaway I've had, and obviously I'm not as experienced as you folks, I'm 29 going on 30, although I do have some gray hairs coming in, which mean I'm just about to get into my prime of brokerage. Or selling, I should say, and basically persuading people. I've heard that once you turn 30 to 40, people say yes a little bit easier. So I'm looking forward to that. But nevertheless, I would definitely say that doing deals that are more conservative in nature that make sense from a 10-year, 5-year perspective makes a lot more sense than, buying junk, flipping it and selling it, where a lot of people kind of got caught there. I definitely think one thing I want to be really conscientious of as well is know the history of the property. So I just actually spoke on this with the previous podcast before, which was a premise of you can't put lipstick on lipstick. So let's say a seller bought a deal, or a deal was bought for 19 million or 20 million in X year, and then the next person sells it for 35. Okay, well, it's not really realistic for you to create $15 million of value on that, because there's only so much ceiling that can be created and added to a property and growth to be done. So be very careful about how many times a property has been traded and really know that story and the why. I think we also just generally speaking want to buy better quality deals, because you know what? Better quality real estate over time will just treat you better. So you get what you pay for in life. So those are kind of some of the things that we're looking for sure as well. It makes me really grateful to not scale too quickly, but to pick your spots when you buy. And if you pick your spots to buy really aggressively, call it from now till 2026, you'll probably be fine, because the market's going to carry you up. That's just how things work. But if you got really aggressive when the market was really hot and money was easy to raise, you're probably in some trouble right now. So I think just kind of notice and get a temperature of the market. And when the market's hot and really fun and everyone's happy-go-lucky, that's when you're pessimism hat should be put on. And then now when people are a little bit sad, that's when you should put your optimism hat on and to really go full gear into it. So that would kind of be how I would answer the question and kind of how I look at it. And you get indicators, you get signs that things are kind of changing and happening, and listen to them. Listen, there's no reason why us three don't have and don't time the market perfectly with outside of a black swan event every single time, because we're insiders. We're in the business. We have the information. Just be disciplined and trust the numbers. So you got to suspend belief ever so slightly to get a deal done from time to time. And it's worked out, but within reason, be that person. So never be too optimistic when the market's really hot. It would be kind of one thing. Another question here. Obviously, you've got your deals there, but why do you like the fund-to-fund model as well to add to your investors? Is it for geographical diversity? Is it because maybe there's not enough deal flow on your guys' end to fulfill all the investments? Where does kind of a model and a partner like us come to play for folks like yourself?
I'll speak for myself. My investing philosophy has always been to acquire cash flow producing assets. And I think far too often we get caught up again on that control standpoint. So how I view this partnership and the fund to fund opportunity, I view this as an opportunity to A, present more opportunities to my tech and investor base. I view it as an opportunity to, like I mentioned, diversify outside of the Midwest, which, you know, we're actively targeting in. And I think it's just at a high level, an opportunity to scale. And I want to take advantage of that. So that's where my head is at from a fund to fund model and our partnership moving forward.
Yeah, and just to add on to that, I also think if the right opportunity is there and the right property presents itself, right investment, why not? I think this is something that Danny and I are both going to put in six-figure checks into ourselves. We really like the opportunity, getting to meet you guys in person, just getting boots on the ground, seeing the property myself. You guys were kind enough to not only walk us through that property, but several of your other properties so we can meet some more staff and see how you guys operate. And then I spent half a day driving rent and sale comps in the area. So it's just a property that I really like as far as the model. It's a combination of diversification. You know, deal flow has been slower the last 12 to 18 months, as we all know. I think it's important to keep up momentum. And so if we can, you know, offer our investors a different option, it doesn't matter if we're on the LP side or GP side to us. We just want to invest in good real estate long term. That's our goal.
Yeah. Well, and hopefully you can use this fund to fund model as maybe an indication as to what you might want to do in the future, potentially for some of your projects as well. And the vehicle there associated, if some people can't hit the co-GP requirement or the joint venture requirements. So hopefully, if nothing else, it's an insight into that and just is another little tool in the tool belt for you to kind of pull out and use when necessary. These are also some questions I'd like to end with as well. So coming up, what do you think is going to struggle the most? Office, of course, we all know, but do you think there's any other asset classes or things that you're seeing with the brokerage side or the tech side that you think is going to struggle? And this doesn't have to be specific to real estate. You know, in the tech world, obviously AI is going to disrupt some things, as we all know. That's, you know, not the first reported here on this show. But what do you think is going to struggle coming up here? Real estate, tech related, just economically speaking with the looming recession?
Yeah, I think with real estate in general, insurance is going to be a real issue, as we've seen across, you know, all the Sunbelt states and Southeast, Southwest, even in the Midwest to an extent, insurance has just gone up so much. And there's only so much it can go up that you can only pass on so much to the tenants. So I think that's going to be a real issue amongst all asset classes. I think the properties that specifically, whether it's retail, office, or industrial, that have to be repositioned in order to make sense. There's a lot of retail out there that probably doesn't make sense to be retail anymore. Maybe it should be office or industrial, or office space should be industrial or mixed use. So I think some of the properties that are out there that are struggling that need to be repositioned, you can't just sell it to the same end user because there's just fewer buyers and fewer users. So I think the properties that need to be repositioned all across the board are going to be the ones that struggle the most.
I'll be honest, Craig, I think Brian summarized that pretty accurately from a real estate perspective. I'm in cybersecurity from a tech standpoint, and I actually think it's, I think it's a great industry to be in. So I can't necessarily point anything out from a tech space, so to say, which I guess is a good position to be in. So,
well, I have a very good friend who was a very early employee at the company Darktrace, if you're familiar with them.
Oh yeah, I'm familiar.
In cybersecurity, of course, and he very, very kindly reminds me how great the space is and how it's very undersupplied from a job perspective. So if you're a future graduate, if you're going to college and you want to get in that side and find a good vehicle to invest in real estate, maybe hit up Danny and get into the cybersecurity route, because as they say, it's undersupplied. And I don't think criminals are going to go anytime soon, nor will hacking or AI stuff of that nature. So those salespeople are going to be valuable nonetheless with any sort of AI implementation or not. On the other side of the coin, what do you think will do well coming up here with the market turning, of course? What do you think will perform? Typically speaking, this is why we like the workforce housing, because guess what? You know, last I checked, you know, service jobs, things of that nature, blue collar people still need to work. They still need a place to live. And, you know, that price point makes a lot of sense. So be curious to know what you think will do well here coming up.
I think, you know, multifamily and industrial, like most people, there's a lot of new industrial coming out, and that's the Midwest is a big market for industrial as well. On the multifamily side, I think some of the things that will do better than others are going to be some of the newer product, call it 80s, 90s build and newer. Some of the older product, 50s, 60s, 70s, it just gets harder and harder to maintain those over time. And I think, you know, the value add properties, you know, I guess people who can go into a value add project with their own capital, be able to withstand no income for a year or two, I think those people can do very, very well right now, because you're going to buy at a good basis today no matter what. So if you are able to take down a project that most other people would stay away from because of the interest rates, in 2-3 years, you're going to be very happy that you own that property.
Absolutely. And basis. And sometimes you got to cut the finger off to save the arm. You know, if you've got to be a little thinner on cash flow, but you get an asset you truly believe in, that's always the wise and prudent choice to make there. Oh, what's making you just most excited for both of you guys, as we're obviously, as I said, recession coming around the corner? What's getting you guys excited about that and the opportunity at hand? Obviously, we're seeing pretty heavy and steep discounts, as we've kind of alluded through the entire show here, which is nice. We're kind of in this optimistic period where we're kind of just waiting for the darn thing to happen, for the recession to officially hit, so we kind of find the bottom and can kind of come out of it, right? But, you know, what is getting you most excited here? Is it just getting good deals, good basis? You know, where are your guys' heads in that regard?
You know, for me, I think the idea of a recession, it's very much out there. It's on everybody's minds. That's why a lot of people are holding off on investing. They don't know yet if we're at the bottom. I think just because the market stabilized over the last few months, and by that I mean interest rates are still going up and down, you know, 10, 15 points a week sometimes. But 6 months ago, they were going up and down 30, 40, 50 points a week sometimes, you know, sometimes 20, 25 points a day. So I think the market stabilized a little bit. There's a lot of sellers right now, more compared to a year ago, that are now coming to terms with, look, this isn't just a blip in the economy. Interest rates are going to be higher for longer, most likely. Even if they cut, they're probably not going back down into the fours anytime soon. And this is the market. So a lot of people in the commercial space took out 5 or 7 year debt. They have to either sell or refinance. When they go to refinance, they're not going to have the equity that they need, because the banks are still lending based off debt coverage. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of cash in refinances have to happen in the next 12 to 24 months. So I do think there's going to be more deal flow, not only because the market stabilized a bit, but because sellers have come to terms with it, that this isn't, you know, going to just go back down into a 3.5-4% interest rate environment anytime soon. I think a combination of those things, along with a lot of buyers, you know, there's a lot of syndicators who, you know, popped up in the last 2-3 years. You know, you take a real estate class online, or you go to one event and you're a big syndicator. Those people aren't there anymore. So I think more deals coming to market. Yeah, fewer buyers. You know, overall, I'm as bullish on 24 as I've been in a while.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I don't have the stat in front of me right now, but to Brian's point about expiring loans, I think over the next 18 to 24 months, and the opportunities that I feel it's going to provide, who, you know, operators like Lone Star, like ourselves, who understand the market to really acquire at an attractive basis.
Yeah, I mean, you guys both said two things I fully agree with there. And it's funny, I can't tell you how many people inbound to us that are in our distribution channels who have emailed us, and this is not me knocking them or, you know, dancing on anyone's graves, but a lot of people have been operators that are now want to be capital raisers because, you know, their operations business is kind of, you know, blowing up, unfortunately. And it's not easy to do. We respect it. And I say this all the time. I would never operate real estate. I just happen to raise capital for an operator, if that makes sense. That's my kind of niche role there. It's really hard work. It's down. It's gritty. It's in the mud. You know, it's funny. You said, you mentioned Dan or Brian, that you used to wait tables and whatnot back in the day. I drove Uber for 3 years every single weekend while cold calling during the weeks and holding open houses and stuff. So getting in the real estate business is a privilege and a luxury, not a birthright. And, you know, it's not easy to make money in real estate. It takes a while to get it going, and the gritty will survive right now. So it's time for those who have, you know, put the sweat equity, put that hard labor into it, and are really committed, that will really thrive in these times coming up. So I'm really excited to ride that wave up with you guys all collectively together. Finally, my last question, my favorite question, what is your guys' real estate hot take?
So I'll give you a hot take. I'm pretty bullish on Chicago overall. I know it gets a bad rap because it's a blue state. Illinois certainly has its issues. There's no question. But I think it's just, especially by the national media, it's just been so disrespected overall. It's
What you
really
mean, Chirac, as some would call it on Fox News, potentially, respectfully?
Exactly. Look, if you're going to a Midwest school, if you're graduating from any Big Ten school, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, wherever, if you want a job and you want to live in the city, you're coming to Chicago. So there's a lot of people, a lot of the right people that you want are moving here. The supply and demand issue that we talked about before, it's real. Chicago, just the city itself, the population is around 2.7, 2.8 million. We have 4,000 units coming online to the market in 2024. 4,000. Nashville, the entire MSA, is over 2 million people, and they have, like, I think 13 or 12,000 units coming online. So while we're, there's more growth in some of those markets, the supply and demand metrics just make more sense. And not only Chicago is actually one of the few cities, it's kind of landlocked. There's really nowhere else to build. The only way you're building is when you're tearing down. And not only that, we're losing some units because there's a lot of people, especially in the affluent north side neighborhoods, they're buying a three or a four flat, they're tearing it down or fully converting it into a single family home so they can move their family in there. So not only do we have a lower supply than most other metrics, we have, in some cases, we're losing housing in the city. And on top of that, rent growth, as I mentioned before, I think it was number one or number two over the last, in 2023. I think we've averaged the last 2 years, 7 to 10% rent growth, and we continue to appreciate. So there are some issues that Illinois has, and it's not as landlord friendly as others, but I know some, people in Atlanta and Houston who can't evict right now either. So it's, I think it doesn't get the credit that it deserves. And I know I'm a total homer and I love Chicago, but yeah, that's my hot take.
Says the guy who has the Chicago sign right
It
behind him as well.
was
But
perfect. Yeah.
right. And just to add on to that too, is when you compare it to the coast, Chicago is relatively an affordable market that offers many of those same characteristics. And me being in the tech space, Chicago is still a great place to make money. And there's still many opportunities in high-paying industries like the tech space in Chicago. So my hot take, I'll take something more kind of mindset driven. Whether you're looking to be an investor, capital raiser, operator, really think who, not how. And there is a book on it, and I'd recommend anyone to read that book, but I wouldn't be on this call right now if it wasn't for Brian, if it wasn't for you, Craig. So it's really understanding where you want to go, and from there, understanding who is going to help you accomplish that goal. So.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, gentlemen, so much for being on the show. It's been such a pleasure in this short period of time. I feel like we're fast friends already and really just looking excited to grow our networks together, to mastermind, to put best practices in place, to really grow together, to get wealthy together, do fun stuff, do deals, visit each other in our respective markets, and make some money together. Where can people find you? Where can they get a hold of you if they want to learn about maybe some of your offerings, what you've got there? Naturally, you guys are selling something totally different than us. So want to, of course, bring the whole Lone Star community and family together here. How can people get a hold of you? Is it LinkedIn? Is it YouTube? Is there a distribution list? Is there, mailings? What's the best way they can do that?
Yeah, the best way is go directly to our website. It's arcequitygroup.com, ARC. You can sign up for our investor list there and see anything new that we're working on, get on our newsletter distribution list, or email us directly, Brian, Brian, at Arc Equity Group, or Danny at Arc Equity Group.
Cool. And we'll, of course, have that in the description. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I will see you, Danny, in Phoenix coming up here. Of course, we will be in cahoots because we'll be working on a project here together. And guys, be like them, take action. If you're looking to learn more about us, if you're looking to figure out ways to do business together, to partner, take the leap, take the action, book the call. Everyone, thank you so much for listening to this episode. We'll see you next time.
Thanks,
Thanks,
all.
Craig.